30 years ago, burns patients needing a skin graft had to wait weeks for new cells to grow. But after the work of my next guest in the 1990s, cells could be grown in just 5 days, changing the lives of patients around the world. But it was the tragic Bali bombings that saw pioneering plastic surgeon and burn specialist Professor Fiona Wood become a household name. She saved dozens of lives in the aftermath of the terror attacks that killed 202 people, including 88 Australians. Now, almost a week before the attack's 20th anniversary, the life and work of the former Australian of the Year has been documented in a new biography written by author Sue Williams. Earlier, I had the pleasure of speaking with Professor Wood about her biography, Under Her Skin. Professor Fiona Wood, welcome to RN Breakfast.
Thank you very much.
I want to start almost 20 years ago. News had arrived of the bombings in Bali, and the detail of the tragedy was coming from one of your registrar doctors who happened to be there at the time. When did you realise the scale of the attack and the efforts that may be required?
Oh, pretty early on in that Sunday morning, because Vijay and his wife Prayer were working in Sengalar Hospital at the time. And so we really had first-hand knowledge of the extent of the injuries and the enormity of the task that was going to be in front of us.
This book is full of really confronting detail about your work on victims, particularly of the Bali bombings. There's one section where you explain how burn victims can appear relatively healthy one minute before quickly deteriorating the next. How widely understood were burns cases at the time?
I think burn injury is something that if you've ever been, a patient or known someone or someone in your family or friends, then you have first-hand knowledge of the severity and the sort of the extreme nature of things. It's like a pebble gets dropped in a puddle and the sort of the waves keep going, and it affects a lot of your body systems. It affects a lot of those people around you. I don't think unless you have that first-hand knowledge, you know now. Did you know then? No.
Bali was just one of the many times that your skills have been needed to save a life. In 2007, you treated journalist and one of my colleagues at the time, Cynthia Banham, who was one of 9 Australians on the Garuda Indonesia Flight 200 that overshot the runway and crashed in a field, killing 20 passengers and 1 crew member. Now, while Cynthia was in a coma, you had to consult her family about amputating both her legs to keep her alive. From the outside, those conversations really require really different skills to those needed in the operating theatre. How did you approach those parts of your work? Because your work isn't just the technical, it's the emotional intelligence too. Talk to me about those dimensions.
I think, first of all, I'd say nothing is an individual. I work in a great team. I always have. I've been very privileged to work in a multidisciplinary team where we approach these situations together. I have the privilege of being team leader, but there's no point in being in that position without a team and actually respecting the input from those around you. And so there's many situations where we have to deal with very difficult decisions and then try to explain that in a way that makes sense to everyone around us is part and parcel of what we do. That is, you know, as part of our training. And I think, you know, this Royal College of Surgeons is very aware of this and spends a lot of time in those non-technical skills and training those non-technical skills. And so I think, you know, I'm very fortunate to be a surgeon. But I'm a doctor and I'm a person. So you put all that together and you do your best on the day.
This book helps us understand why you entered the field you did. In the late 1980s, you were offered a role in the plastic surgery department of the Royal Perth Hospital. Why was that the field that you decided you wanted to be in?
I got hooked into the sort of burn injury care earlier than that, in about 1985, when I first started to really see some of the burn survivors that were just extraordinarily inspiring, and including some fellows who were young men in the Second World War who got burned and they were still coming back for reconstructive work. at the hospital I was working at. And so I think a burn injury is challenging. It is that mix of intensive care as well as a technical surgical craft that you have to learn. But also, I was really driven to see how we could improve and do better. So I feel that, you know, making those decisions and that, yes, this is the area I want to focus on. I think maybe on one hand you can think, oh, this, you know, I'm really single-minded or really boring because I can't think of anything else. But there we are. You know, that sort of single-mindedness, I think, is really important in order to drive forward that body of knowledge that's so important in actually reducing the suffering from our burn patients.
10 years after that, you patented your life-changing invention, the spray-on skin grafts. Tell me about that process. How long did it take for you to co-develop that with your colleague?
Well, Maria and I started working together in 1993. And first of all, we were using a small area of skin that you take from the non-injured area and you could grow into a cell sheet. And we were skin grafters, so that seemed to make sense. But it did take a long time. And so we wanted to do it faster. And so we realized that using the skin that was more immature, it paradoxically appeared to perform better on the wound. And so we very rapidly, by 94, 95, we were putting the cells on as a suspension. And then we think, well, how do we get this on in some kind of organized fashion? You know, how do we put this fluid onto the wounds? And we were putting them on with dressings in different ways. And then we just turned to each other one day and said, well, we should just spray this on. And that's when we started doing a whole lot of experiments around aerosol delivery. And so we were well in and truly into that space by 1995. And we've been spraying skin cells on ever since. But it's interesting now because it's a journey that's always ongoing. And so we're now trying to spray the framework of the skin as well. And so we have a robotic 3D printer. We have handheld 3D printer, and we're exploring how we can spray both the cells and the framework to give a more substantial skin repair. So these journeys never end. There's always something you can do better.
Your work then and after those attacks was the reason you were named as the Australian of the Year in 2005. It's a really extraordinary role that takes you around the country, provides many opportunities and a platform like no other. What did you want to achieve in that position?
Oh, I still feel that was like the 2005 is a bubble that I can't still believe it happened to me. You know, it is a very unique situation. I was asked, what is it that I wanted to share, you know, with the people around Australia? And I've seen, you know, the power of taking basic science to the bedside. And I see the power of working, getting the system to work well. And I think we are privileged that we have one of the best health systems in the world, but that doesn't mean to say we should be complacent. We should build on it and hone it. And if we want to really drive advancing technology, then we have to step back from that. And I think each and every one of us needs to take the responsibility for the decisions we make around our health, our wellness, our education, so that we can help those more vulnerable around us, so that we can offload the health system. Learning first aid, for example, start the heart, stop the bleeding, cool the burn, and secure the airway. Simple things that we can all learn that will change the burden on our health system. We can all actually take that responsibility. And if we do, and we can actually look at prevention in a real meaningful way as a whole community, then we will be able to engage in the advancing technology of tomorrow. And our health system will continue to be one of the best in the world. And so that is the message of 2005, is the message of 2022. You know, it's a work that is ongoing.
Just finally, your life has been dedicated to care and progress in the field of burns treatment. You mentioned new innovations you're working on. What's next in this space? Where do you see it going?
Well, there's so much. I mean, so much we're working on and so many things, so many opportunities. I mean, we've got a program we have trying to unscar the scar by changing the bonding in the scar of proteins. Can we, and as the protein turns over, can we change that environment such that the cells start to become more like skin, normal skin cells than scarred skin cells. So we've worked with a group with Pharmaxis, and we've gone all the way from a molecule to the first in human, and we're in the middle of a randomized controlled trial now. And one of the other things we've got on the go is looking at the skin as part of the nervous system and using transcranial magnetic stimulation of the brain so we can drive brain plasticity with the aim of improving the quality of the outcome, both functional and physical. And then we've seen scarring is more than what it looks. We talk about, you know, scarless healing inside and out. And so we have the physical scar that we work on, the psychological scar, and also the physiological scar, where we see some people have unmasked the diseases of aging after this burn injury. And understanding that gives us an enormous opportunity for innovative therapies as well. So it's just like a bit of a mushroom cloud. There's always more and more and more to find out.
Professor Fiona Wood, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you very much, Patricia.
Professor Fiona Wood is a former Australian of the Year. She's a pioneering plastic surgeon and burn specialist who's helped Australians survive and thrive following what is often the most difficult time in their life. Her biography, Under Her Skin, is written by author Sue Williams and is out today.
It's easier than ever to hear your favourite local and national ABC radio stations, live and on demand on the ABC Listen app.